From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. In the new book he co-authored about Mitt Romney, the reporter Scott Hellman says that in his life, Romney has always followed a strategy, a trusty formula, as he puts it. First, you find the data. You dig into it. You analyze it and test it. And then you act. And the formula has worked. Romney has become successful at pretty much everything he's tried. But Hellman says politics is another thing. There are too many intangibles to apply a fixed equation. He notes that Romney has so far lost more political races than he's won, and his inability to get beyond the formula is one reason why. Today in the program, we're talking about why Mitt Romney hasn't yet broken through with voters. Is he too rigid, too out of touch? Is it his money, his religion, his personality? What is it? After the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. There is some gift that successful political figures possess. It's hard to pin down. It's not just charisma or an ability to deliver a speech. It's a connection that the good ones are able to make with the people they're asking to support them. The trick is making your public persona the same as your private one. And in this sense, Mitt Romney has a problem. In the new book he co-authored about Mitt Romney, the reporter Scott Hellman says that in public settings, Mr. Romney comes across as rigid, as too programmed, bottled up. And that's much different from the man that Romney's inner circle sees. They see a warm and relaxed person who's funny, goofy even. Hellman says Romney's challenge is to narrow the gulf between those dueling perspectives of the outsiders and the insiders. Today in the program, we're exploring why it is that Mitt Romney hasn't yet broken through with voters. Polls in Florida indicate Mr. Romney will easily take the primary there, but his campaign hasn't been able to consistently connect with the Republican Party base just yet. Is it his strategy? Is it his message? Is it his money, his personality, his religion? We'll talk about it today, and we invite you to join the conversation. 801-585-WEST is our number, 801-585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Scott Hellman is joining us today. He, as I said, is co-author of the biography called The Real Romney. Hellman is a staff writer at the Boston Globe. He's been the paper's political editor and a national political reporter there. He covered the 2008 presidential campaign, and he's joining us today from NPR member station WUMB in Boston. Scott Hellman, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
McKay Coppins is back with us. He's a reporter for BuzzFeed Politics. He's covering Mitt Romney's campaign. Coppins has been a reporter for Newsweek magazine and for the Deseret News as well. He is in Nevada these days in anticipation of this weekend's caucus there, and he's joining us from Nevada Public Radio in Las Vegas. And McKay Coppins, welcome back to you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I wanted to begin with sort of putting the story in perspective. Let me start with you, I guess, Scott Hellman. Is Mitt Romney, in terms of his sort of lackluster following in the GOP so far, is that somehow unique? I mean, aren't most candidates who tend toward the center of the spectrum, aren't they often seen with suspicion in these early days? Or is Mitt Romney different, I suppose, is the question.
That's a great question. I think to some extent you're absolutely right. This is something that you see from candidates connecting with, I think, the you know, sort of far right and far left. I think you see it also in the Democratic Party. So in some sense, you're exactly right. This is not unique. And Mitt Romney has been very clear as he prepared to run again for president this year that he was not going to be the Tea Party candidate. He was going to position himself as the alternative to that.
Right.
And so, of course, one result of that is, not surprisingly, a lot of the people in that movement don't see him as one of their own. So I do think it is typical in some ways. At the same time, as you said in your intro, there are politicians who I think have been better at connecting with people and finding a way to sort of bridge those gaps. And I think that's something that Mitt Romney is still wrestling with very much.
Mm. Well, as we go, Scott Hellman will talk about some of the aspects of Mitt Romney's life that may give some clarity to his public and private persona, for that matter. McKay Coppins, though, what do you think about the question?
Yeah, I mean, it is true that moderates always, you know, have trouble in primaries, especially in Republican primaries. Although Mitt Romney clearly has something else missing, as you alluded to in the introduction. And I think, you know, it's something that it's ingrained in his personality and is who he is, that won't be easily or perhaps ever overcome. And so he's going to have to find other ways to succeed in politics. And that it's kind of an interesting way forward to see how he charts his success and his path to the presidency without having a personal connection with the voters who support him.
Scott Hellman, I wanted to ask you about an important theme in the book that you've written. And that is your portrayal of Mitt Romney as almost above everything else, an observer. Like, he observes the situation. And you talk about how he hangs back. There's something of a formula where you – and it's all about data for Mitt Romney, as you say. He really gets after the data, wants to learn everything he can about it. Analyze it rigorously, as you say, test it constantly, and as you put it, observe always. Talk about that aspect of Mitt Romney and what that tells us about him as a politician as well as a businessman, I suppose.
This is something that I think goes back to his childhood and really back to his relationship with his father, George, who, as you know, was a very successful auto executive in Detroit and then also a three-term governor of Michigan. Mitt was the youngest of four. He idolized his father growing up. He watched everything he did. He listened to everything he said. And in many ways, I think even from a young age, modeled his own life after his dad's. So I think that's where the observation starts. But I think he also is somebody who, as he grew up in his faith and in his business and in politics, became analytical above all else. And there were many instances where that served him well. Look no further than his career at Bain Capital, where he made a gazillion dollars for himself and his partners and his investors by really looking at every possible cranny of a deal, you know, gaming out every scenario as far as it would go, gathering every piece of market data and company data that was out there, you know, and throwing that all in a pot and then sort of making a decision. I mean, it served him enormously well. And I think to some extent in politics it has served him well, but only to a point. I mean, one of the fascinating things about him the last time around, and to some extent this cycle as well, is the way that they set out in a very strategic way to start courting conservatives around the country. And he developed a political action committee and started raising money and spending it in very strategic places, giving, you know, $500 to some Iowa state senator that you and I have never heard of, but that would be crucial later on. And you know, it was a very smart way of doing it. They set up this very innovative way of having this PAC that, you know, without getting too far into the weeds here, could raise unlimited amounts of money because they had state affiliates in states that did not have limits, right? So instead of having to abide by some arbitrary, you know, cap on donations, he could turn to his friends and say, hey, can you write me a check for 50 grand? Yeah. And put it in, you know, put it in the hopper. So that, I think that served him very well. Where I think it's a problem, of course, is when you start to get into relating to people, presenting yourself as a sort of consistent person, showing that, you know, above all your principles and your heart and what you believe drive you in what you're doing. I think that's where it trips him up, because he has tried to be, I think, overly strategic and analytical in analyzing and trying to sort of take advantage of these intangible situations where strategy doesn't exactly get you there. And as we say in the book, I think sometimes takes you to the wrong place entirely.
Yeah. So you can build almost everything into an equation like this, except, I suppose, the human factor.
Exactly. And it's so critical in politics, especially in retail politics, as you know. So I think you can sort of see his mind working when you watch him on the campaign trail. McKay can probably address this better than I, but it's like almost everything he does has some sort of strategic element to it. And again, there are times when that's really great, and there may be aspects of that that would serve him really well if he were in the White House. But as a political candidate, as somebody trying to explain to the American people who you are and what you believe and that you're willing to sort of fight for it, whatever comes, that's when it becomes a problem.
McKay Coppins, speak to that, if you would. What do you see of the public persona of Mitt Romney on the stump?
Yeah, it's interesting. Following his campaign can really be, and he, right now, since he's kind of been the front runner for a while, has the largest the traveling press corps with, from outlets all over the country. And, it can really be a thankless task to follow him around just because his his stump speech never changes. His answers to questions when he takes questions from voters, you can almost, before he even answers, guess exactly what he's going to say, and you'll be pretty spot on. He very rarely goes off script, and it comes back to exactly what you're talking about, which is that he has the strategy, he has the plan laid out, he's fairly confident in his plan, and he doesn't see any reason to depart from it, right? And so, when you ask him a question, he's not going to engage directly your question, although I think he does have a personal tendency. I think his inclination is to intellectually engage, but that's overridden by the fact that I have, this idea that I have to stay on script, I have to follow the plan, and so it makes it really, really difficult to squeeze any small nugget of news out of all these campaign stops because he's just constantly, sticking to his strategic, very well-crafted plan.
Scott Helman, you say in the book, very early on in the book, you talk about how one of the characteristics that seems to define that persona, almost more than anything else, is that he carries himself, in your words, as a man apart, a man who sometimes seems to be looking not into your eyes but past them. What is that about, do you think?
Well, I think if you talk to people who know him very well, including, sort of people in the bubble, so to speak, or in the inner circle, and then even people who know him well who are not in that inner circle, there's a remarkable difference in terms of how they perceive him. I mean, if you're somebody who is in his circle, right, his wife, his kids, his close friends, oftentimes people in the church, they see a very different Mitt Romney, and it drives them crazy to hear people talk about him as being cold and detached and distant and all these things, because to them he's not, and he lets his guard down and he's not reserved, and he is funny and he's goofy and he's a great dad who will get down on the floor with you. I mean, all these things that I think you'd kind of want in a president, But when you get outside that, and again, even for people who've worked with him for years, would say that, they often felt like they were there to serve a purpose, right? There was a job to be done. It was your job to execute it. You're in this position and you're working for me, and here's our task. And there wasn't often a lot of, well, tell me, by the way, how are your kids doing? Or what do you want to do with your life? Or how's that dog of yours? In a way that you can imagine other politicians doing. I mean, Bill Clinton is the famous example
Of
everybody
course.
comes back to,
Yeah.
right? But he had this incredible way of making you feel like you were the most important person in the room. And I do think Romney lacks that, and I think that's what a lot of people perceive. And it's like everything's a transaction almost, if you're not, if you're not in that sort of the inner sanctum, if you will. And I do think his principal challenge is to let people in there, and it's a risk. I mean, as McKay said, he's so disciplined and so on message. And the few times where he's gotten off message recently, it's been a disaster, where he's said these things about, I'll bet you $10,000, or what was the other thing he said? I like to fire people. So I don't think it's just a question of sort of letting him be who he is, because I think that, he has shown that he can create more problems for himself.
This, I have to say, this raises a question, maybe more existential than you're willing to talk about, but it's about, is this a gift, a personal trait that some have and some don't? You talk about Bill Clinton, clearly had whatever it was, that ineffable gift of being a terrific politician, reaching out and absolutely working a crowd. And do you think there's any indication that this is something that's, born into a person, that you can create it or get it out, break down the inhibition, or is it just something you have or you don't? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It's a really interesting question. I mean, I guess I would, my sort of visceral reaction to that is that it does feel like something you kind of have or you don't. I mean,
Right.
certainly you can learn how to relate to people, and you can learn how to be successful in politics, and you can paint by the numbers. But at the end of the day, I think especially in the heat of these presidential campaigns, I think it does really come through sort of who you are and who you're not. And there have been people who have been amazing at this. And, you know, it's not to say that this equals being a great president. It might be the reverse. You know, you might be somebody, as we love to say, that you want to have a beer with, but you don't really want him on the other end of that red phone, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't think there's, yeah, I think we have to be careful to sort of say what this means and what it doesn't. But I, you know, I do sort of feel like there's something to that idea that it's kind of innate. And if you don't have it, I guess you find ways to compensate.
Right. McKay Coppins, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that it's also interesting, you know, what he said that, you know, in the heat of these presidential campaigns and when you're constantly being exposed to the press and to the media and to just average voters, something of your personality shines through. But I also think that we have to be careful about not kind of paying too much attention to the media narrative about him, because it almost goes too far. You know, for example, I'm not in the camp of people who believes that Mitt Romney doesn't have any, you know, personality or any, you know, any soul or any character. I mean, he does. He is a person, right?
And that's the narrative, right? You're saying. That narrative is that he's this robot.
Essentially a robot, exactly. That he's a political machine that's been built to to become the Republican nominee and beat President Obama. And people don't like that about him. And certainly I think that there is something about him that makes it more difficult to relate one-on-one with people. On the other hand, though, you know, for example, Tag Romney, his son, is on Twitter and will sometimes tweet pictures of him doing, you know, daily tasks that seem like they would be endearing. Like, you know, last year he tweeted a picture of him doing dishes after Thanksgiving. And I think just last week or a couple weeks ago, he tweeted a photo of Mitt and Ann, his wife, doing laundry at the hotel in South Carolina. And, you know, the kind of universal response on Twitter that I saw was kind of eye rolling and, oh, come on. Like, this is, of course, just another ploy to make him seem relatable and human. And he would never really do his own laundry. But as a reporter who happened to be staying at that same hotel, I can say, you know, he actually was just doing laundry with Anne and hanging out with his wife. And I think that, you know, it almost has gotten so bad, this narrative, that people don't believe there's anything human about him, when in reality, he's still a, you know, a person that that has human moments, and he still does laundry and he still, you know, hangs out with his wife. And I think that's something that we have to keep in mind.
You know, I wanted to ask you what you thought about what effect, and we'll get more into this as we go along, but I'm wondering what effect you think, and both of you, his religious positions as a lay minister in the Mormon Church, as a bishop and a so-called stake president, leader over a large congregation in New England, in Boston, what effect that had on his, I guess, public temperament. Do you know what I mean, Scott Hellman? I mean, you'd think that sort of thing would soften a person up. I mean, if you have the, again, and maybe it's a caricature, as McKay Coppins points out, that you have, you know, here's the venture capitalist, cold-eyed, you know, analyzer of data. You'd think that would soften him up, having to minister, to those in need in his different congregations. What do you think, Scott Hellman?
I'm sort of fascinated by this, because I think one of the reasons that people do, there is this caricature of him out there, and you know, let's be clear. I mean, he does further this himself at times. I think it's because if you look at, I mean, Mormonism has been such a big part of his life. Yeah. His faith is hugely important to him, and always has been, or at least certainly has been until the time of his own mission in France. And, you know, as it was to his father, right, and his many ancestors. I'm sure a lot of your listeners know the history well. But, you know, it fascinates me that it's such a huge part of his life in terms of how it informs, you know, who he is and his values and how he lives and what he thinks of family and work and discipline and service and all these things. And yet he pretty much walls it off from view because I'm sure they, you know, clearly don't want to talk too much about his faith, fearing that it'll turn more people off than it will turn on. And yet when you put so much of that a part of you behind the curtain, I think that's part of why we have this image of him as being sort of detached, or like we don't really know who he is. And in fact, I mean, he was a leader in the Mormon Church in the Boston area for many years. You can find people who had wonderful experiences and people who had terrible experiences with him. But by and large, I mean, I do think there are a lot of good stories for him to tell in there. I mean, one of the things I was most surprised by in reporting the book was how incredibly generous he and Anne and their kids have been with their time and their money, oftentimes to other people in the church, which, of course, is a big value, in the Mormon faith, but not exclusively, yeah, to people who are outside it, too. And, I mean, story after story after story of him, you know, racing in to help a neighbor pull out furniture from a burning house, or, you know, helping to build a local playground to honor the late son of a friend in suburban Boston here, or, you know, helping out these two kids who were injured in a horrible accident. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And I do feel like if he could find a way to talk about that and find a way to say, look, this is how my faith informs who I am, it could actually really help him.
McKay Coppins, talk about that, because you would think that these, you know, for as many years as he spent doing that role for Mormonism, that would have provided so many stories about him reaching out and connecting with people. Why doesn't he? Is it because they see that aspect of his story, the sort of the Mormon part, as a liability? Do you think you understand that?
Yeah, sure. I think that, definitely he makes every effort not to talk about his religion, even when there are kind of public controversies that arise over anti-Mormon rhetoric or something. And even when kind of it's obvious that he's being defended by the mainstream media, he just goes out of his way not to talk about it. He doesn't want to talk about it. I think there's also something to be said, like I was saying, that there's kind of this narrative that he's a robot, and when he tries to, or his campaign tries to put out, you know, information that would maybe seem more humanizing or endearing, it tends to flop because it looks like pandering. I think that there might be a fear there. But I think we also have to remember that, you know, as a stake president, as a bishop and stake president and as a missionary, he ministered a lot to individual families and to people. But you also have to remember that being a stake president is, you know, if not 90%, pretty high percentage, of administration, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of doing consultant type jobs, right? And that's probably what made him so effective as a stake president, that he has a very analytical mind. He's a good leader in that regard. And so he's able to kind of, you know, keep the programs running, keep the trains running on time, as it were. And that's what you spend a lot of your time doing as a stake president. And so you see glimpses of that in the way he approaches his campaign. It's not as if he were spending all of his time as a Mormon minister, you know, in the homes of poor immigrant families, helping them. He was doing a lot of administrating.
That's McKay Coppins. He's covering Mitt Romney's campaign for BuzzFeed Politics. Scott Hellman is with us. He's a reporter with the Boston Globe, co-author along with Michael Cranish of the book The Real Romney. We invite you to join us. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'll take a brief break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're asking why Mitt Romney hasn't been able to seal the deal with voters. Polling indicates Mr. Romney will easily take the Florida primary, but the campaign so far has been marked by drastic swings of fortune. One moment seems inevitable as the party's nominee. Other times it seems, well, not so clear. And the question is why? Is Romney really all that unique? And if so, what are the factors that may be holding him back? You can join us. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Scott Hellman is with us. He's co-author of a new biography called The Real Romney. McKay Coppins, also with us, a reporter for BuzzFeed Politics. He's been covering the Romney campaign for some time now. Scott Hellman, I wanted to ask you about George Romney and his relationship with his father. As you say, grew up idolizing his father, sort of became kind of, and you say remains, actually, George Romney, kind of a spiritual presence at his side. Very much like his father in many ways. But you say in politics, he's he's a lot different from his father. His father was, you know, followed his gut, was kind of an idealist, was all about principle. His son is different, and I wanted to see if you understand why.
Well, it's a great question, and this is one of the things we were fascinated by in the book. I wish we had, you know, many more pages and much more time to go more into George, because I think he's a fascinating figure. Yeah. I mean, it's true. He was, as you know, very blunt-spoken and willing to say whatever was on his mind, and sort of whatever happens, happens. You know, it was, this is how I feel, and you should deal with it. And, you know, part of that might be, and this is speculation a little bit, but if we think about where George and Mitt fit in the sort of Romney family lineage, George is the link between the sort of pioneer heritage, you know, of the kind of the early Romneys who helped really spread the Mormon faith and were persecuted and driven out of, you know, city after city and eventually driven out of the country. George is born in Mexico in the Mormon colony down there. He's sort of the bridge between the kind of the Mitt Romney that we see today, the sort of successful white businessman, suburban businessman, you know, that seems very civilized, you know, and this sort of pioneer history. So maybe, you know, George clearly grew up differently than Mitt did in many ways. So fast forward to his life. I mean, he was very outspoken on civil rights, even within the church when that was controversial. He was an outspoken dissenter when he was part of Nixon's cabinet. He famously, as you know, sort of blew his own presidential chances in 68 in part by saying he'd been brainwashed in Vietnam. So one of the things that I think Mitt did was watch his father and
learn from that
and see that there may have been many great things about his dad, but he saw, I think, where it also failed him. And I think also Mitt's a product of his mother, too, of course, Lenore, and she was reportedly much more reserved and much more diplomatic. So he's, of course, getting those genes as well. But I do think, I mean, his sister Jane, Mitt's sister Jane, told a colleague of ours at the Globe that Mitt was really affected by the brainwashed moment, and as the family was, and he realized that you have to be really careful what you say, and you have to really think about what you're going to say before you say it. So, you know, in an interesting way, I think, you know, from what I understand, voters really connected a lot more with George because they valued that blunt spokenness. But I think Mitt saw that some of the dangers of that and tried to go a different way.
McKay Coppins, do you get a sense that Mitt Romney is crafting his campaign based on what he saw with his father? And in some ways, I've heard it put this way, kind of avenging his father's loss.
Yeah, I've heard that too. I think that there tends to be, inclination for pundits and political writers to
psychoanalyze
where we may not be qualified. Although I will say, though, that there's no question that he alludes to his father on the campaign trail all the time. He has clearly sees his father as one of the biggest heroes in his life. I think that he wants to succeed in part because he saw the kind of destiny set forth by his father, this political this political future for the Romney family. Now that said, you know, he is in almost every way the complete opposite of George Romney as a politician, and I think part of it has to do with what Scott said, which is that he has a very different upbringing. But one thing that you see in Romney is that you didn't totally see in George is kind of deference to institutions and authority that has really made it difficult for him to catch on with the Tea Party populist segment of the Republican Party. Right? He is always paying respect. You know, for example, the day after Newt Gingrich kind of laid into the mainstream media and said it was despicable to start a debate asking questions about, his ex-wife's allegations, and kind of got this uproarious reaction from the crowd in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. The day after that, we asked Mitt Romney, you know, do you have any complaints about the media? And he said, no, I don't have any complaints. You know, I think that you all work hard and I appreciate all the hard work you do, and just spell my name right, you know, which is just such a Mitt Romney thing to say. You know, he's not going to take a swing at the media. He's not going to rile up the base. He, you know, he's kind of he has a lot of deference for institutions of power and authority and kind of the old order. And that's something that you didn't totally see in George, I don't think.
I think that's a great point. Let me just add one thing to that. I hadn't thought of it that way, but I think you're absolutely right. And it's sort of fascinating to think about today if George were around. I mean, clearly not his politics don't line up with the Tea Party. I think that's clear. But his style very much does more than Mitt
right.
does. I mean, they would really value the kind of truth to power thing that George did. And you're right, Mitt's an institutionalist at heart.
Is that Scott Hellman for Romney a potentially fatal flaw that he can't throw the red meat when he really should?
I don't think so. I mean, it feels to me like if it's a fatal flaw anywhere, it's a fatal flaw in a primary. And you know, here we are on the eve of what's likely to be a probably comfortable Romney win in Florida. And so I think the odds are clearly in his favor to win the nomination. And it, you know, in a general election, I mean, yes, there's anger and economic uncertainty and anxiety among the general populace, but I would venture a guess that most voters, certainly the sort of center of the country, prefer somebody who's not throwing bombs, but somebody who, you know, feels like we've got something here to work with, and let's work from the inside to fix it. So, you know, again, in a Republican electorate, yes, it's potentially fatal, but it looks like he's going to be okay.
801-585-WEST, the number two. Join the conversation. Let's go to the phones. Don is with us in Heber, Utah. Don, welcome.
Yes, I have a question. I'm a Republican, and I'm really concerned about one issue, and you kind of touched on a little bit earlier about his faith, and I'm surprised that Newt Gingrich hasn't used it yet about him being a Mormon bishop, and it worries me that in the general election, that's going to come out in the national media, and I don't recall that there's ever been a bishop of any faith as a nominee to be president, let alone elected to be president. I mean, I understand that there's some differences in being a Mormon bishop than being a Catholic bishop or an Episcopalian bishop, but I don't think once this gets out, there's going to be much defined. It's just going to be he's a bishop in the church, and you want somebody who's a bishop becoming president of the United States.
Hmm. Well, it raises the salient question, Scott Hellman and McKay Coppins, of is just how much is religion affecting his ability to connect with certain voters. What do you make of that? Respond to that, if you would. Scott Hellman?
It's an interesting question. I mean, I think clearly if he's the nominee, I mean, I think we're going to have a big conversation in this country about Mormonism. I have not talked to anybody in Salt Lake about this, but I have to believe that the church is preparing for this, you know, day and night almost, to figure out how they're going to respond to these inquiries. And, you know, I mean, in some ways, it could be a great moment for them to have somebody who is so representative of their faith and has so many great attributes sort of out there as their spokesman. But of course, there are going to be all these negative things that will come up too and questions people ask. So, you know, again, I think this is proportionally, it's probably a bigger problem in the Republican electorate. But
I
absolutely agree that I think he's going to have to find a way to talk about this and make people comfortable with it, because the fact is, we've never been in this situation. You know, if he's the nominee, we've never had somebody this prominent, this close to the presidency, as a member of that faith. You know, when you're the pioneer, as we saw with Obama last time, you got to face a lot of stuff that your predecessors have not faced.
McKay Coppins, what do you think? It seems really difficult to measure how much of an effect his Mormonism is having on, you know, people's reluctance to support him. What do you think?
Right, because in 2008, you know, you had candidates actually openly talking about it, and you don't have that this time, which I think just for Mormonism alone kind of represents at least some incremental movement in the right direction as far as, you know, cultural acceptance. But, I mean, there's no question, you know, in South Carolina, exit polls showed that for people who said it was very important that a candidate, that their nominee shared their religious beliefs, Mitt Romney did very poorly among those people, and there was a substantial base of the of the Republican voters. So I think maybe, you know, we might be seeing kind of some more silent you know, I hesitate to use the word prejudice, but, you know, some silent kind of filtering on the religious basis, you know, more so than in 2008 when it was up front. But Mitt Romney, his main problem with this is that he just does not want to talk about it. And I think it goes back to the idea that in making his plan for his campaign, he saw that, you know, Mormonism doesn't poll well, right? And while I do think that, his advisors, old advisors and people who know him say that that is one of the things that motivates him, wanting to kind of bring broader cultural acceptance, societal acceptance to Mormonism. He thinks that the best way to do that, being the pragmatist that he is to not talk about it. And if he wins the presidency, he'll still be the first Mormon president, right? The problem is that, I don't know if the media or voters are going to let him get away with that in the general election. I think it's going to come up again in a big way. And after going through an entire primary basically refusing to talk about it, he'll suddenly have to retool his strategy.
So it's like he wants to be the post-religious president, like,
exactly.
like President Obama wanted to be the post-racial president.
Exactly. And in fact, I've written about this, and he faces some of the same problems, right? You know, Obama, while he was became the first black president, he's faced criticism throughout his presidency and certainly during the campaign from people like Cornel West, kind of activist leaders in the black community, saying he needs to be talking about issues that are important to black America. And I've started to see that among Mormon supporters of Mitt Romney too, say, yeah, it's great to have a Mormon president, but man, I really wish, would it kill him to speak up and say, you know, we're not a cult, you know, things like that.
Scott Hellman, you write about Mitt Romney's conversation that he had with Richard Land, the head of the public policy arm of the Southern Baptist Convention. And Land, and I think a lot of other evangelicals are, you know, were trying to convince him to speak more to, I guess, the sort of high-profile social issues, things like abortion and gay rights and those kinds of things. What was that? What's that dynamic been? If you would talk about Mitt Romney's relationship with the evangelicals in that sense.
Well, this goes back to his last campaign, right, when he first ran, and really a fascinating difference in terms of how they're running things this time and how they did back then. If you remember back in 2006, 2007, you know, the opening in the Republican field was on the right. Rudy Giuliani and John McCain were the big stars. They were both sort of center-right, socially liberal on some things. So there was no room there. Nobody really knew Mitt Romney. He wasn't going to topple those two. So the big space was on the right, and they set out to position him as this socially conservative candidate who was very outspoken on abortion and gay marriage and abstinence, and they thought that these views would find resonance in the evangelical community. And so alongside that sort of message strategy, they also really heavily courted evangelical leaders like Dr. Land and many others, inviting them to their house, sending them these chairs that say, "You always have a place at my table." I mean, they really went out of their way. Mitt went out of his way to show that, look, I'm just like you guys. We believe the same things. You know, yes, our religions are different, our doctrines are different, but let's focus on where we're similar. And I think you'll find some people in the Romney camp who think that was a big mistake. In fact, they were getting this pushback from people at the state level saying, you know, this is never going to work. People are not going to believe that he's a social conservative. It's fine to believe those things and, you know, answer questions in that way, but let's not make it the thrust of the candidacy. But they did. I mean, that was really it. And so I think it was a relief in many ways, honestly, that the economy became the number one issue this time, because that's much more in Romney's wheelhouse. And we recount in the book how, he was again getting counsel to by some anyway, to sort of go hard on the evangelical thing and give another speech on Mormonism. But this time, he said, look, you know, read Article 6, I'm past that. You know, there's no religious test for office, and that's it. And as McKay said, I don't think he's going to be able to get away with it that easily. But, of course, he's hoping that, above all else, people want somebody to lower that unemployment rate, you know, to bring growth back, to solve the debt crisis, all these things, and that will trump any concerns about faith.
Scott Hellman is with us. He's a reporter with the Boston Globe, co-author along with Michael Cranish of the book The Real Romney. McKay Coppins is also joining us. He's covering Mitt Romney's campaign for BuzzFeed Politics. We invite you to join us, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'll take another break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are talking about Mitt Romney and his rocky up-and-down trajectory with American voters. We invite you to join us. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Scott Hellman is with us. He's the co-author of the book, The Real Romney, co-author along with Michael Cranish. And we also have McKay Coppins with us, a reporter for BuzzFeed Politics, who's been covering Mitt Romney for some time now. Let's go back to the phones. Mark is joining us in Salt Lake. Mark, welcome.
Hi, thanks.
Sure.
As a committed active Mormon myself, it would be great to see a president reflect my values, but I just don't see any of Mitt Romney's political stances reflecting my values as a Mormon. So I don't support him for that reason. And his experiences Bain Capital, which, while skilled and is nothing more than a reflection of unrestricted free market capitalism, does not qualify a man to be president. His job there was shifting money around, firing people in order to make something more efficient, and an obligation to shareholders to make money. That is not the qualifications for president. A president can't just go around firing people, and it's not, his goal is not to make money. His goal is to provide for the security of this nation, economic, social, you know, and on other levels, and not just to make money, you know, to meet the bottom line. Right. So those are two reasons why I don't connect with him. I do connect with him because of the stories I've heard about him as a state president. He seemed like a very moderate, responsive person to people's needs. And I love the story about him putting his dog on top of the car. That's probably what I would have done. Makes him more human. Right. But, you know, neither of those qualify him to be president.
Well, I'm glad you called, Mark. Thanks very much. Let me put that to you, Scott Hellman and McKay Coppins. I mean, it was a critical selling point for the Romney campaign. His background as a businessman at the private equity firm Bain Capital. Is that not working so well now, Scott Hellman?
I think part of the reason it's not working so well is that he's not handled these questions very well in recent weeks, and I think he's acknowledged as much. I don't think anyone or most people, I would say, voting in terms of voters, don't begrudge anybody who's successful. They like to see people make money. It's part of what we all think America's about, right? And we like where there are examples of people who have, you know, built something and really succeeded. And Mitt Romney has succeeded many, many times over. I think the trouble is he has not found a way to talk about his wealth and his success without turning people off. And I think that's a huge risk because... Mm-hmm. And maybe McKay has seen some of these in person, but when he says things like, I like to fire people, or, oh yeah, I made some money in speaking fees, but it wasn't that much. Well, it was, you know, $375,000.
Yeah. Right.
Or he says people who are talking about my wealth in a negative way or my successor, it's the politics of envy. I mean, all of these things broadcast a lack of empathy, I think, for people who are struggling and don't understand that and aren't anywhere near his income bracket. I mean, the caller is certainly right that Bain's main purpose was to make money. I mean, that was the point. It wasn't to create jobs. It wasn't necessarily to build businesses. Of course, they tried to do that, but really it was to make money for investors, and they were extraordinarily successful at that. But I think this is a potentially huge liability for Romney if he doesn't figure it out. I mean, especially given, look at the Occupy movement. I mean, one thing that movement has really succeeded in doing is putting income inequality at the top of the conversation. And here you've got somebody who, I mean, it's almost sort of an opposition researcher's dream. I mean, somebody, you can't invent somebody who would represent the 1% better than Mitt Romney. And yet, I think it's going to come down to how he talks about it and how he shows that he knows what it's like for the other 99. And can he apply those lessons as president?
Let's go back to the phones. 801-585-WEST is the number to join us. Aaron is with us in Salt Lake. Aaron, hi.
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, there's a couple of points I want to make, and I don't agree with the biographers. All this personality cult worship that I hear about Mitt Romney is such a turnoff. It wants to make me, for lack of a better word, just vomit. you know, everything that I've heard about how personable he is. He's actually quite robotic. But speaking as a veteran representative here in the state, as a state service officer, I can tell you that I don't think that Mitt Romney is going to get the veteran vote because he evaded the draft for 6 years. I know there were other presidential candidates who did the same thing. But Mitt's story of the 1%, to quote the biographer, nobody can represent the 1% better than Mitt. You hit the nail on the head when you said that. Because the people who go to war, who represent the corpus of the United States, the regular people, the bread and butter, the blue-collar people, the George Romneys, not the Mitt Romneys, those are the people who are not going to, at the end of the day, when the dance is over, want to go home with Mitt Romney because he doesn't represent their values. This is a guy who not only evaded the draft, but then ran off as a missionary to become a Wall Street profiteer while the people who did go, you know, came home honorably wearing body bags. So there's this huge disconnection between Mitt Romney and veterans. He's just not going to get the vote. And in terms of this, the Mormon card that he's playing, this victimization thing that he's doing, that this psychological nonstop infomercial.
Wait. What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? I don't know what you mean by that. This victim card. What do you mean?
The victim card?
Yeah.
You know, having been associated with Mormons all of my life.
Wait, Aaron, don't go into a story. Just explain what you mean by that. You said this victim card that he's playing. Just explain what you mean by that. I don't need the life story context. I just want you to explain it. We don't have that much time.
He can never stop either apologizing for his beliefs or saying that he's being attacked when, in fact, every single Mormon's creed is every member a missionary, and it's their duty to nonstop talk about it.
Okay, let me
a pretext. It's almost like his candidacy is almost, in a weird sense, a pretext to nonstop talk about something that is more dear to him than the United States, and that's his own personal beliefs.
Okay, well, I want to put this question to Scott Hellman. Scott Hellman, we should say that you do in your book talk about the deferment to Vietnam. I think Aaron has an impression that you don't. You want to say something about that? Maybe defend yourself.
Well, yeah, I mean, we do explain in the book that he got student deferments and then he got a religious deferment for his mission years in France. And I won't go into too much detail about this, but because he was from Michigan, there was a big controversy at the time about this, as you may know, because people were raising questions about, you know, anybody who went on a mission could get a deferment. So they started limiting the numbers of people, I think, who came from each place. Because Mitt wasn't from Utah and he was from Michigan, of course, he had a much greater chance of getting that deferment. There were a lot fewer Mormons. So he did get student deferments. He got a religious deferment for his mission work. And then by the time that he was done, I think he drew a high enough number that he was never going to be called. And interestingly, he said a couple of different things. At one point, I believe he said that, you know, he never had any intention of serving and wasn't interested in it.
Yeah.
And then at a different point, he said, you know, he wishes he could have had an opportunity to serve. So I don't remember offhand when he said those things, but it is a slightly different answer to the question.
McKay Coppins, you want to respond at all to Aaron? Something you may have heard there
that
you wanted to react to?
I mean, one thing that I didn't see at all that Aaron brought up is this idea that he's playing the victim card with his faith. I think that could be partly a response to spending a lot of time talking to Mormon supporters of Mitt Romney, who I think some of them do feel that their faith is being unfairly targeted in this presidential campaign. But I mean, Mitt Romney, I think, is almost to a flaw gone out of his way not to play the victim card. I remember last fall when at the Value Voters Summit, a pastor who was endorsing Rick Perry kind of told reporters that Mormonism was a cult and that, you know, we shouldn't have a Mormon president and all these things. You know, when it was brought up at a debate a week or two later, Mitt Romney looked very uncomfortable, even more uncomfortable than Rick Perry talking about it. You know, Rick Perry kind of gave his standard answer, which was, you know, I think that I don't agree with the pastor, but I'm not going to, you know, distance myself from him any more than that. And Mitt Romney kind of shook his head, you know, nodded his head very furiously and said, that's fine, kind of urging, you know, desperately pleading for the moderator to move on. You know, I think Mitt Romney is very aware that playing the Mormon victim card is not politically expedient, and I think he's gone out of his way not to do that.
Scott Hellman, you say in the book that Mitt Romney has changed. I mean, he may have had a rigid strategy throughout his life, but But he has changed in some ways his strategy away from last time. You mentioned not so tethered to a script, for example. Are you seeing them fine-tune the campaign in some way?
I think they have. I think there are a lot of things, despite his current struggles to get past Newt Gingrich and the rest of the people in the field. I do think that they've made some important improvements this time. And look, I think he's also just more experienced at it. He did that. He's done it before. Yeah. And so I do still think he's a better candidate. I mean, there are things like we've been talking about that I think have dogged him for a long time that may not be fixable. But the biggest change above all, of course, is that they're focusing on the economy, which is clearly the thing he knows the most about. We can debate his Bain background, but it is that is what he knows the most about, and they've recalibrated to make that his central message.
Quick final question for both of you. It's been an extraordinarily negative primary battle, and of course, it's nothing is settled, but let's assume Romney does become the nominee. How much damage do you think has been inflicted on his message and his brand? McKay Coppins, you first.
Yeah, I mean, I think that President Obama has quite enjoying the slugfest. I think that, at the end of the day, if Mitt Romney becomes the nominee, conservatives and Republicans are going to coalesce behind him. But the question is whether with so much negative advertising both ways and having been kind of branded this Massachusetts liberal by Newt Gingrich, will conservatives just kind of reluctantly go into the ballot box and pull the lever for him? Or will they, actively encourage their friends to go vote for him? I think that could be a serious question going into the general election.
Scott Hellman, less than 30 seconds here.
Yeah, I mean, I remember this coming up big time in 2008 when I was covering the Democratic side, and everyone said, oh my God, Hillary and Obama are destroying each other, and there was some truth to that. But at the same time, I mean, I think Barack Obama was a lot happier to talk about Jeremiah Wright in March than he would have been in October. So I think there is an element of this. I know this has been particularly nasty, but there may be ways that the Romney campaign can say, when this comes up later, look, we already hashed that out. We litigated that back in the primary. Let's move on.
Scott Hellman, his book, written with Michael Cranish, is The Real Romney. He's a staff writer at the Boston Globe. Scott, thanks very much for the time.
It's been a pleasure to be here.
And McKay Coppins, following Mitt Romney for the BuzzFeed Politics. Thanks very much to you.
Thank you.
I'm Doug Fabrizio.